her head listening for prey. This time of year, barred owls eat mice, voles, squirrels, rabbits, and sometimes.
This is the Greenville Cub Scouts, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGSC, Agra, Catskill, and Hudson.
Very good. Meow.
We recommend this station.
No sports, no rock, no information for mindless chatter. We're your station.
Turn on the news replaces Donald Trump Theater at 3 p.m. Thursdays on WGXC after the inauguration, picking up bits and pieces of the week's news and dropping them in a fictional radio network with computerized news readers, aggregated reporting, and automated music. Tune in Turn on the News every Thursday at 3 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Wake up! Wake up, wake up, wake up! Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake! This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy, your voice of choice, the world's only 12-hour strong man on the air, here on We Love Radio.
Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra, that's 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on a Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is Andrew Richard Porter, also known as Andy with close friends and family. Andy grew up in Texas and always had an interest in outdoor activities. At a young age, Andy got involved with the Boy Scouts and used that association to foster a great appreciation for the natural environment and the outdoors. After countless camping trips, hiking excursions, and outdoor experiences, Andy went on to become an Eagle Scout, the highest rank a Boy Scout can achieve. After graduating high school, Andy attended Texas Tech University for 1 year and then joined the United States Navy in August 2002. Trained as a sonar technician, Andy was stationed on the USS Ross, DDG 71. On board the Ross, Andy got the opportunity to explore the world and visit countries that would have otherwise been unavailable to him. It gave him a greater perspective and appreciation of other cultures. Andy finished his naval career in Virginia Beach, Virginia in 2012 after 10 years of service. He currently works as a defense contractor for Valkyrie Enterprises in Virginia Beach, where he lives with his wife and kids. Andy has a daughter from a previous marriage and two young boys with his current spouse, Christina. Andy has several hobbies that keep him busy. As an avid fisherman, Andy loves putting a line in the water at just about any opportunity he can get. He especially enjoys tying his love of fishing to his passion for camping and canoeing. His canoe is aptly named Lone Star Cormorant, regularly taking the latter out on camping fishing trips to the North Landing River in Virginia. And he also enjoys being an amateur naturalist and actively participates in bird watching activities and gardening. Other interests include 3D printing, Warhammer 40K, painting, woodworking, and playing sports with his kids. Andy, welcome to the show.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for inviting me.
Andy, This is the first Andy other than me on the show.
I'm honored. I'm honored to be here.
We're about to get confused.
I know, right? Should I be Andy 1 or 2?
Andy.
Yes, Andy.
Can you name some of the countries you've been to? Because Mike was mentioning that you've been to countries around the world that you maybe not have had access to. And can you maybe give me one or two that are most memorable?
Well, I've been to, I think it's 17 different countries. That includes Scotland.
Did you go to Scotland?
Scotland, Brazil. That's Glasgow.
Oh, well done, man.
Yeah, I've been twice in Glasgow, and that was a great port. Portsmouth, England.
Right, yeah, down at the very bottom of England.
Yeah, really at the bottom. We went to France, Greece, Crete, Croatia, Italy.
Yeah.
Malta. Mm-hmm. Israel, Turkey, Oman. Even stopped in the United Emirates once or twice. My first deployment in 2004 was to Spain. And to a lot of countries that we went through the Suez Canal into the Persian Gulf. And that was an area where at the time in 2004 it was a war zone. And it was very interesting to be there. We didn't get a lot of port visits there. We did pull into Oman, and that was very interesting. You get a different experience. I could talk for hours about, you know, those individual ports. But the ones that were probably that sit with you the longest are the ones that Israel is probably at the top of the list. We pulled into Haifa, Israel, which is just south of the Lebanese border, and the ship offered, you know, $40 tours to Jerusalem. So we took a bus to Jerusalem and explored the Holy Land and got to see the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the Old Town, the Wailing Wall, all that stuff in Old Town Jerusalem, which was very fascinating. And then I took another tour to the Dead Sea and was able to swim in the Dead Sea.
Float.
And you float like you're wearing a life vest. It's the weirdest thing. It's so salty that the salt clings to just about any foreign particle that's floating in the water. And there's no sand.
Any cut in your body, you feel it?
Oh, yeah. The tender skin, like between your fingers or in other places in the netherworld, those have a tendency to be a bit tender after you get out of that water because it's like acid. I made the mistake of trying to test how far I could swim down, and the soft skin around your eyes, doesn't matter how tightly you close your eyes, you're going to get that in your eyeball, and it hurts so bad. There's also a very famous archaeological site right there next to the Dead Sea called Masada, and it's a very famous story of about the last stand of some Jewish rebels who were fighting the Roman Empire at the time. And I got a tour of that plateau, and it is sobering because the Roman Empire surrounded that plat is a mountain. They surrounded it, and their encampments are still visible today. Little square fortifications all the way around. They surrounded it so that no one could surrender, and they literally built a ramp to the very top of that plateau to lay siege. And on the eve that they were to take over, all of the fighters on that plateau decided to just commit mass suicide in lieu of being caught by the Romans and enslaved. And they left all of their food and provisions behind to show the Romans that it wasn't because of starvation or hunger that they were surrendering. It was because they were standing up for freedom. And I thought that was just incredible. So that one sticks with you pretty good. There's also very beautiful ports. You know, Croatia was extremely beautiful. Spain was extremely beautiful. You know, and then there's other ports that are dangerous. You know, I almost got robbed by a 9-year-old in Brazil.
sounds funny, but it probably wasn't.
He grabbed his belt buckle and pretended like it was a gun. And it was just like, you know, get out of here, you little kid. You know, we didn't even give him any mind. But
who's he going back to tell, you know?
Yeah, exactly, right? So it was it was really cool. So the Navy has actually provided me a lot of great friends, and you're paid to kind of travel the world, and you see things and hear things that just you can't explain sometimes. So it's just really, really cool.
Wow. You know, Andy, it sounds like your experiences in the Navy, you were filled with a lot of wonder. You experienced a lot of wonderful things. And your first song,
yes,
that you listened to on your Catskill Cabin getaway is Wonderwall by Oasis. And why that song?
That song always kind of brought back memories, you know, as a 90s kid. You know, you listen to that song in the car. It's a beautiful song. It kind of a serenade, and it can be applied to just about any setting, a sunset, a sunrise, you know, just a good experience with friends. It's a good song, and I really, really like that song. It does just, there's nothing crazy about it. It's just a good melody.
Today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you. By now you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. Backbeat, the word is on the street that the fire in your heart is out. I'm sure you've heard it all before, but you never really had a doubt. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. And all the roads we have to walk are winding, and all the lights that lead us there are blinding. Somehow realize what you're not to do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. And all the roads that lead you there were winding, and all the lights that light the way are blinding. There are many things that I would like. Don't know how. I said maybe.
That was Wonderwall by Oasis. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC ACRA. That's 90.7 FM. Today's guest is Andy Porter, and we are discussing the songs and items that he would take on a Catskill Cabin getaway. WGXC is community radio that relies on support from listeners like you. Please visit WGXC.org to make a donation or become a sustaining member today. You know, full disclosure, Andy is my cousin.
He is?
Andy yeah, we're Porter. Cousins. That's right.
Did not know that.
That's right. We don't share the same last name for no reason.
There's two Porters on the show.
That's right.
Andy, do you know what a Porter is in Scotland or Britain, rather?
Someone that carries items around, right?
Well done, one, mate. One Mike didn't know that.
I knew that. What? I knew that.
When? No, you didn't.
I thought I knew it. I don't know. I mean, it makes sense.
We have a long tradition of being beasts of burden.
Yeah, carrying other people's stuff.
Yes, my lord. Anything else, my lord?
You there, boy. Shine my shoes.
Yes, my lord.
Shine my shoes.
Now carry my horse back to the house.
Yes, my lord.
So, now, Andy, so your next item, your first item that you want to take on your Catskill Cabin getaway is a field guide of North American birds. And I'm wondering, on your travels, did you see any exotic birds?
Yes, actually. Birding has always been a passion of mine that our grandfather, Mike, passed down to me. In fact, I still have a bird book that Grandpa and Grandma gave me when I was probably 8 or 9 years old. And at the time was thinking this is the lamest gift anybody could ever give me, but has a very special place on my bookshelf. Birding is a wonderful pastime that is something that I love, you know, seeing a little bird that you, and trying to identify what it is and what their habits are. It's just so cool. And I used that while we were at sea a couple of times to try to figure out what some of these birds were. The most memorable was in the Persian Gulf. This very interesting bird landed on our ship. And
it had a spy camera on it.
It was the most beautiful.
And it was sitting looking at the stars.
sorry to interrupt, Andy. Sorry.
Oh. Well, it was a beautiful little bird. And it landed on our deck to take a rest, or it got discombobulated out at sea. I don't know where it came from. There was no land anywhere nearby. And I vividly remembered the markings of its feathers and its patterns. And I believe it's a bee catcher. We'll have to look that up. But it's very, very common in the Middle East and in the Africa area. I think it's called a bee catcher. There were other times where sparrows and swallows would land on our deck. They would get discombobulated. And they would just be tuckered out. They just couldn't fly anymore. And we would try to just kind of ferry them off to the side of the ship to stay out of the way of things so they wouldn't get hurt anymore. Probably the weirdest thing, flying object that landed on my ship was a bat. We were pulling into a port in France.
Wuhan. And,
no.
Right? It was right before sunrise. And we had to get the mooring lines out on deck ready to go. So when we pulled into port, we can just throw the lines over the side and get the ship moored up. And one of the sailors freaked out, started screaming. And we went over to investigate. It must have got discombobulated in the exhaust of the ship and landed on the deck, and it just didn't know where it was. Well, they didn't know what to do with it. So I very compassionately went and grabbed some work gloves and I
punched
them up and I put them in a cardboard box. I put them in a cardboard box and I brought them inside the ship into one of my spaces that I had right there next to the door of the outside. And I was just going to keep them there safe and out of the way. And then I was going to let them go the next night. That was my plan. We pull into port. We throw the lines over the side. We get everything tied up. By this time, it's past breakfast time. The sun's way up. And I go into this space where I had put this box. And I open the box up, and there's no bat. The bat's gone.
Oh, no.
So now I'm like, okay, looking around this space, trying to figure out where the where the hell does bat just go inside the ship? Like, I better find this thing, or it's going to either crawl somewhere and die and smell up the place, or worse, it's going to get even further into the ship and start freaking people out. So I'm panicking at this point, digging through this space, pulling boxes off the wall, trying to figure out where this bat went. And I finally went back to the box, and I lifted up all the flaps of the box this time to make sure the box was indeed empty. And what had happened is one of those flaps had stayed down when I originally looked, and that bat had crawled up the side of the box and was tucked underneath the flap of the box, which is a natural place for a bat to kind of roost during the day anyway. So found the bat, no problem. Made sure he was a bit more secure when I went to lunch and dinner that night. And then when the sun went down, I walked the box out in the flight deck and I kind of shoot him out of the box, and he just took off and went on his own way. And like nothing happened. So that was nice. That was kind of a cool little story that happened. That's not bird related, but yeah.
Close.
Did you ever see any albatross?
Not specifically an albatross. There's lots of birds. Seagulls are just it's a very cool category of bird. Seagulls have a tendency to be, you experience all kinds of different weather conditions on a ship. All right. You're either blasting hot in the middle of the Suez Canal in Egypt, and there's seagulls flying around. These birds, they fly around in the heat of the day, and then in the coldest of weather, they're floating in the water and they're flying in the freezing rain. They're just incredible survivors. And, that's one of the reasons why I named my canoe the Cormorant, because a cormorant is a type of bird that not only can fly, it floats on the water like a duck, but then it can also dive under the water like a penguin and fly around and catch fish underwater. They're even trainable. There's a Chinese fishing method where they train cormorants on a little canoe to go catch fish for the fishermen. They bring the fish back and they collect the fish that way as a fishing technique, which is pretty cool. So that's why I named my canoe the Cormorant. I thought that was kind of a fitting name.
I have a piece of bird trivia for you gentlemen. It's guess the bird time. Guess the bird. This bird uses a bizarre method to hunt venomous snakes. It'll fluff its feathers, spread its wings, taunt the snake to strike, but this bird keeps far enough away so that when the snake does strike, it may only graze the feathers. It misses the skin. This bird will make a snake strike 3 or 4 times to wear it down or continue to taunt until the striking stops. And at that point, the bird uses its large bill as a weapon. It strikes the snake's head a couple of times and afterward picks up the snake and whips it around until it's dead. What bird am I talking about?
Andy, you can go first.
A Harriet?
No, it's not that.
I'll say some sort of wren.
I'll give you a hint.
Meep, meep.
Oh, a roadrunner.
A roadrunner. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so apparently the real-life roadrunner might have given the coyote a run for his money. But I thought that was really fascinating.
Meep, meep.
So, now, Andy, you've done a lot of bird watching. And you reminded me, you know, Grandpa, he gave you this this bird watching book. I remember hearing stories about Dad going out with Grandpa pheasant hunting. Have you ever gone bird hunting?
Yes. I've been dove hunting in Texas, and I've also been turkey hunting in Oklahoma.
You know, and I got thinking, I took my hunter safety course over the summer. New York State, yeah. Because of COVID, they offered it online. And they were saying, you know, pretty much every time you hunt, you kind of ought to clean your gun when you get back. And that's your next song is Cleaning My Gun by Chris Cornell. Christopher John Boyle is his name. Born and raised in Seattle during the grunge movement. We're talking the early 90s with all those other grunge artists. He was a lead singer of Audioslave, Soundgarden. He was in Temple of the Dog. So why this song? Why Cleaning My Gun by Chris Cornell?
So Chris Cornell is a really good artist. Probably one of the few artists I actually know by name. He came out with an acoustic album shortly before he committed suicide that spoke to me. He re-sang a lot of his older songs from Soundgarden that were basically just played and sung by him. Now, that particular song, I wouldn't say has very much meaning to me. specifically. I thought it was a beautiful song when I heard it the first time, and it's my favorite song on the album. It speaks of we all have relationships in our lives where we were tested, we were dragged through the mud, or just you went through a really tough time with this particular individual, and that song kind of ram that home, in it, to me at least anyway, that, you know, no matter how hard things can get, it doesn't always have to end badly. So it's a kind of a sad song, but at the same time, it's one of those songs that it just chills you out, and it kind of puts things in perspective from my point of view, that things aren't as bad as they could be. And it's a good song. I like it a lot. I miss Chris Cornell. He has a very unique voice, and we were really upset when he passed. That was something that hit home for me particularly.
Here's a song I wrote a while ago. It's never been on anything. It's called Cleaning My Gun.
Daddy always said that love would take me straight to hell. Sometimes they were righteous, sometimes they were down. Heaven or hell takes this life, I'll be done. I'll be done.
Thank you.
That was Cleaning My Gun by Chris Cornell. You are listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC ACRA. That's 90.7 FM. Today's guest is Andy Porter, and we are discussing the songs and items that he would take on a Catskill Cabin getaway. WGXC is community radio that relies on support from listeners like you. Please visit WGXC.org to make a donation or become a sustaining member today. You know, anytime I hear Chris Cornell, anytime I hear Pearl Jam and Nirvana, Stone Temple Pilots, I don't know if it's nostalgia or if they were just genuinely awesome, but it's almost like I get tingly. I get this tingly feeling just like, oh man, they were, Chris Cornell was so good.
Yep.
Now, Andy, your next item also sends shivers up my spine. It's not just grunge music. The other thing is a good, sharp axe. So why, tell us about that. Why take that on your Catskill Cabin getaway?
Well, a good sharp axe, I think, is an essential part of any sort of camping trip. While we were hiking on the Appalachian Trail, Mike, I think my trail name was Axeman because I insisted on carrying this trail axe with me that...
Hold on, Andy. Are you the guy that... Mike, right. Okay,
we're gonna get to that interesting story.
Just so you know, I've spoken with you, Andy, before with Mike.
Yeah, really? Right. Oh, so I was the axe man. And I think an axe is an extremely useful tool. You can do all kinds of things with a good axe. So I did a lot of thinking about that, Mike, and you know. Having a good wood fire in the cabin just kind of that kind of brings it all around into one full circle. Have a nice open fire, a wood burning stove, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Beautiful.
So being able to process and get wood for the fire is extremely important, and an axe is extremely useful for that particular task. Now, to the shiver part is while we were on the Appalachian Trail, I had this axe. And we were on our last day of the hike, and we pulled into a camp, and we were going to stay one more night and entertain some thru-hikers on the Appalachian Trail. And to do so, we wanted to have a good hot fire going for them, and we needed to get some wood. So we got our camp all set up, and Mike and I went out into the surrounding bush to get some wood. And I brought my axe with me, and one of the things you do when you hike is when you get to a good stopping point, you want to take your hiking boots off and air out your feet and get on something a bit more comfortable. And in my particular case, I put on some flip-flops and got a little too comfortable with that axe. And while we were harvesting some wood, we were on some pretty uneven ground, and I was taking a swing and it ricocheted off in the wrong direction, and it clipped my foot just below my big toe and almost filleted the bottom part of my foot. And Unfortunately for Mike, he was standing right there and witnessed the whole damn thing. And I realized as soon as it happened that it was a wound. It was not something that you could just...
It was a wound.
That's a wound. Yep. That's not a flesh wound. That is deep, and it is not something that you're going to put a Band-Aid on and finish this hike. So it put an abrupt end to our hike, and I hobbled back to the camping site, and at that point it was, what are we going to do now? Because we're a mile away from the trailhead, and we got to figure it out. And luckily for me, my Uncle Dave, Mike's dad, was smart and quick thinking. He grabbed his map and he ran ahead. And luckily for me, he found a camp at the end of the trailhead, a trailer park. And one of the gentlemen there had a gas powered golf cart, and he knew exactly where we were at. And it was reachable by this cart. And he wheeled that all the way back to our site. We roughly packed up everything and threw it in this cart and got to the trailhead. And they even gave us a ride to our car. And I'm just crippled at this point. I had wrapped the foot with a towel and some tape to kind of keep it all together. And we spent 2 hours on the road looking for a VA hospital because I had just gotten out of the Navy at that time. And got to the hospital, and they stitched me up, cleaned it out, and they commented on how lucky I was, because as gruesome as that wound was, I didn't hit a bone, I didn't hit a tendon. It was just the fleshy part of the bottom of your foot, and I carry that scar to this day. And in fact, whenever I go camping, I have that flip-flop that's cut right down the middle damn near by that axe, and I hang it up in a tree. I hang this thing up in a tree at camp, and that's a reminder that you got to use your head and not use tools that are potentially dangerous on uneven ground. So that's definitely something that I will always remember. And
well, you know, it's an easy mistake to make, especially we had been hiking on the Appalachian Trail, which is not no easy trail, for a couple days. You're tired. It's the end of a multi-mile hike, and you think, I'm just taking a few swings. It's not like you're cutting big logs apart. What's the big deal? And it's a great axe. I remember it's a Husqvarna, I believe, right?
Yes, a Husqvarna. It's a sharp, handmade, hand forged axe. It was a good tool. I still have it.
So have you got a big scar on your foot?
I have a big scar on my foot. I have all the pictures from that. And Mike and Dave chronicled everything pretty well with the cell phones that we have with us. Luckily, it healed up pretty quickly, about a 2 week turnaround. I actually put myself through real estate school while I was recuperating and became a realtor right after it healed up. So I was able to sell houses in the Virginia Beach area.
Yeah, well, something good comes out of something bad.
And, you know, yeah. All things considered, it was a good learning experience, and it makes a hell of a story. And you're okay, thank God. It could have gone a little differently. You could have ended up a man of constant sorrow. You know,
I could have ended up like a man in constant sorrow. Yep.
And that's your next song, Andy, from the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Bluegrass song. And you told us in your list, you know, anything bluegrass that you would listen to in a Catskill Cabin getaway, any bluegrass is nice. And it's something that we listen to together during our backpacking trips. I think, Andy Reid, you and I maybe listened to some bluegrass when we went backpacking. So tell us about this song.
This song is it's the classic song from that movie. If you're unaware, the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is a parody of a Homer tale of the Iliad and Odysseus on his travels back to his homeland from the Battle of Troy. And it's a good, just a retelling of that tale. And I think that's so cool that they tied it into that sort of history. And to tie it into bluegrass has such a big history in our country. It's neat to have that connection.
In constant sorrow. Through his days, high
trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble, I have no friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. It's fare thee well, my home to lover, I never expect to see you again. For I'm bound to ride that northern railroad, perhaps I'll die upon this train, perhaps he'll die upon this train. Sleeping in my grave, while he is sleeping in his grave. Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger, my face you never will see no more. But there is one promise that is given, I'll meet you on God's golden shore. He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
That was Man of Constant Sorrow from the movie Brother, Where Art Thou? Great song, great movie. Andy, your next item is a hammock.
Yes. So I recently got into hammock camping. Hammocks are, the materials that they're using these days is so lightweight and strong that you can pretty much string those things up between anything and pretty comfortably relax. I'm a big dude, so it's nice to be able to slap up a hammock and just swing and relax. And I've recently got my daughter, Kenley, into hammock camping as well. And that's something that we have really enjoyed doing. Hammocks these days come with all kinds of accessories, tarps, sleeping pads, straps, all kinds of jazz. So it's really cool to be able to string that up, and it provides kind of a lightweight alternative to a tent. And I think that's pretty neat to do, especially during the summertime. The wintertime is not as ideal. It's really kind of chilly, but we definitely enjoyed it when we went out last time together. I was thinking of the cabin when I thought of these items, and I imagine the cabin had maybe a patio or a porch that was covered. And I was thinking, what would be really cool is if you strung that thing up between some of those posts on the porch and just kind of sat there and watched a thunderstorm roll through, or a heavy snow, that kind of with a bourbon or a cigar, that's just a slice of heaven right there. So
no. Hammock originates from Tiano culture, Arwakan word meaning. Right? It's an Arwakan word meaning what? Mike, what's your guess? What does hammock mean?
Fishing net.
Did you fluke that, or did you know that?
I is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh no, I don't know. I just guessed.
You serious? Are you winding me up?
I guess. No, I don't know. I didn't know that.
well done.
Really? No
fishing
kidding.
Net.
Ah. Oh.
So there you are. No.
That's something that Christopher Columbus left us. He discovered the hammock in the New World and transferred that to ships. And from that point on, ships adopted the hammock as a way to stuff as many sailors as they could under decks and keep them comfortable and be able to take those things down and have a gun deck still too. So
yeah, and also the British, they used them in prison to save space rather than replacing beds. So in the 19th century, the British used hammocks in prisons.
It's so simple and so comfortable.
It is.
You know?
We usually have one at the backyard in our house in the summer.
Well,
and
now you
nice,
have...
Nice to lie.
Andy Reid, you have a hammock tent now.
I do, yes.
You know, you got a whole tent hammock, so that thing's
tent
pretty sweet.
Tent-style tent?
Yeah.
Was it a war eagle or...
I don't know.
Oh.
It sleeps. I think it sleeps two, right?
Sleeps two, and it's like three tensile areas. You've got to find three trees, and then you tighten it up, and it's off the ground.
I've seen those. Oh, okay. Is that nice?
It is. It's quite comfortable, Mike, isn't it?
Really comfortable. Yeah.
We actually erected it at Mike's camp last summer. And it went quite well.
Yeah, we didn't sleep in it, but, you know, tried it out. And easy to set up, all things considered, and really strong, stable, and comfortable, beautiful view. And I really think, you know, if you wanted to spend a night out under the stars, it would be a really great and comfortable. Also, you can, you know, strap it up high off the ground if you want. You know, we had a ladder. We climbed into this thing with a ladder, and it's great because you're just up there, you know, there in the air. And, wonderful. Now, Andy, your next item, your final item, in fact, cigars. Tell us about that.
Well, I got really into cigars about 3 years ago. My wife's father is a connoisseur, I would say, of cigars. And
an aficionado.
Aficionado. And it became kind of a routine that when we went to go visit every Sunday, he would have dinner for his entire family in the area. We would go on Sunday dinner. And at the end of dinner, he would pour himself a glass of Spanish cognac and go out in his garage and he would smoke a cigar. And that was something that it was a bonding experience to a man that I was going to ask eventually for his daughter's hand in marriage. So I wanted to bond with him. So I picked up cigars and it became something that I really became quite infatuated with. I love them. I purchase them every now and then to kind of stuff up my humidor. I keep the bands on cigars I really like, and I keep them in a little book so I can go back and go, oh, that was a good one, that was a good one. But it became something to the point where when we would go on camping trips and we would have a stash of bourbon or whiskey with us to pull out a cigar and just kind of light it up and enjoy it around the fire. And I tell you, it's not like smoking a cigarette or anything else like that. It's just the aroma, the richness of the smoke, and the history behind cigars is very fascinating to me. So it's something I'm pretty passionate about. I like smoking a cigar. I don't do it every all the time. I'm once a week or so, but it's definitely something I really really do enjoy. Another gift from Christopher Columbus and his exploits in the New World that he picked up along with the hammock. So
now you seem very passionate about cigars and you seem quite knowledgeable about cigars. I'm going to ask you this, both of you, this question, and Mike, see if you get this right. You're at it.
Okay.
Okay. Now, in the mid 20th century, this phrase came into usage. And I want to know if you know what it is attributed to. Close, but no cigar.
I want to say that it's something like, when is it from?
Mid
20th century.
I want to say it's like from carnivals or something. Like a carnival game where you'd have to throw something, and if you did it right, then you'd get a cigar.
You're that's at the weight of somebody.
You're at it. That is correct. That is correct.
That is right. Correct?
Wow, my. Yeah.
Okay. Now, if somebody's listening for the first time, they're thinking, wow, that Mike is an intuitive fellow.
Mike,
what you've
very
missed.
Smart. He knows all kinds of stupid stuff that you wouldn't know.
What you've missed, though, is all the stupid stuff that I haven't known up until this point. So, this is one of these when it rains, it pours moments.
Now, did you know that Winston Churchill was going on a plane? And he was told it was a high-altitude plane. He couldn't smoke his cigars. So he ordered the creation of an oxygen mask that would accommodate cigar smoking with a hole in it.
No way.
Yes, way.
Interesting.
So there you are. Now, you obviously have a humidor, Andy.
Yes.
Right, okay. So how long can a cigar last in a humidor if properly kept?
I know
Andy,
this one.
Andy, I'll let you guess first.
Indefinitely.
What does that mean, though?
As long as it stays properly humidified, it'll last forever.
Mike?
I was going to say 10 years.
Andy's correct. A lifetime.
Wow.
Well done, Andy.
Well done, Andy.
My trivia questions have been useless tonight.
Yeah, they're good. Still fun. Hey, so
that
I got it right.
That does follow the purpose of trivia is to for you guys to get them wrong. But you were actually very good tonight, so well done.
I know,
give yourself
weird.
A round of applause. Golf clap.
Now, Andy, it's been a wonderful time catching up with you, talking about your life. And your last song, Show Me How to Live by Audio Slave, another Chris Cornell song.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So this song is just it's more of the more upbeat songs that I put on my list. Audio Slave is, again, another band that Chris Cornell sung in. And this song just speaks to me, you know, like, I'll show you how to have a good time and to live life to its fullest. And that's definitely something that speaks to me. And the song just, it makes you really want to go fast on the highway. So that's definitely a bonus. Geez. So it's a cool song. And I like I said, I mean, I miss Chris Cornell. He was such a talent. So
now, Chris Cornell, he had a 4-octave range.
Yes.
I don't remember
what ranking he had in like rock singer rankings. You know, he's in the same category as, you know, Freddie Mercury and other things like and other guys like that.
I was just gonna say that.
He's had such a range. Yeah.
But in this particular song, apparently he achieves an unusual effect by repeatedly, I found this quite funny actually, repeatedly striking his throat with the side of his hand while changing pitch.
Huh, I never knew that.
Really?
I'd have to listen for that.
And I think for his health, I'm quite glad it wasn't a hit. Because he'd have to perform it constantly and like be knocking hell out his throat. But obviously a key figure in the grunge movement in the 90s. Unfortunately, 2017, May 18th, he hung himself. But quite
sad. Very
sad. But yeah, so let's see if we can hear him slapping his throat while he sings this song.
Thank you.
That was Show Me How to Live by Audioslave. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC ACRA. That's 90.7 FM. Today on the show, we have Andy Porter, my cousin. And we're discussing the songs and items that he would take on a Catskill cabin getaway. WGXC is community radio that relies on support from listeners like you.